I'm Elizabeth Harrison in Providence. The House Finance Committee last night passed an $8.2 billion budget for the fiscal year starting July 1st. As Rhode Island Public Radio's political reporter Ian Donis reports, the spending plan doesn't include any new broad-based taxes, and it wipes out some of Governor Lincoln Chafee's initiatives.
With little debate, the budget passed its first hurdle on a 12-0 vote, with two Republican lawmakers abstaining. The spending plan reduces proposed help for distressed communities and eliminates Chafee's plan to cut the corporate tax from 9 to 7% over time. House Finance Chairman Helio Mello says lawmakers had to work with what they had.
Because we fell short in anticipated revenue of about $51 million, there was a lot of new programs that the governor wanted to do that we could just not do. We just were not able to afford it.
The budget boosts support for K-12 and higher education. The plan includes an initial payment of $2.5 million to pay back 38 Studios bonds due next May. It also earmarks $50,000 to study whether paying back the bonds is the right move, and it kills the loan program that lured 38 Studios to Rhode Island. The budget moves to the House floor for a final vote next Tuesday. Ian Donis, Rhode Island Public Radio.
The Republican leader in the Rhode Island House says he plans to vote no on the state budget next week, since it includes money to pay back 38 Studios bonds. GOP leader Brian Newberry was one of two reps abstaining last night when the House Finance Committee approved the budget. He says he's not alone in opposing repaying the 38 Studios bonds.
I would say if you ask people in their hearts, most people don't want to pay it. Whether they will ultimately vote to pay it, that's the open question.
The cost of the debt from 38 Studios is estimated at $90 million, but many people believe the state should pay it back. A study released yesterday by the business-backed Rhode Island Public Expenditure Council says defaulting would hurt the state's bond rating and increase borrowing costs in the future. While kicking off a push to install a network of 50 electric vehicle charging stations, Governor Lincoln Chafee announced the state will replace much of its fleet with hybrid and electric vehicles. Rhode Island Public Radio's Catherine Welch says Chafee made the announcement yesterday at Roger Williams University.
Director of Administration Richard Leach says the program started this spring, and so far the state has replaced 30 gas-fueled vehicles with hybrids. He notes that a waiver will be given to agencies, such as law enforcement, that can't find a comparable substitute. Leach says there are no all-electric vehicles in the state's fleet, but that will change soon.
Commissioner Gold will get probably the first one because she's the energy commissioner. I may be turning in my state vehicle and get an electric vehicle. I'm looking at that now.
Leach says federal dollars will pay for the price difference between a gas-powered car and an electric or hybrid one. The network of 50 charging stations is expected to be online by mid-August. Catherine Welch, Rhode Island Public Radio.
And state and local police spent hours yesterday at the North Attleboro home of New England Patriots tight end Aaron Hernandez. They're investigating a body discovered in a nearby industrial park. Sports Illustrated reports Hernandez was not believed to be a suspect, but police were searching for a car they think Hernandez rented. The Sun Chronicle of Attleboro says the car was a Chevrolet Suburban with Rhode Island plates. It was registered to the Enterprise Rental Company. It's Morning Edition on Rhode Island Public Radio. I'm Elizabeth Harrison. Casino gambling, just like in Las Vegas, is scheduled to begin today at Twin River in Lincoln. The one-time dog track has become the first venue ever in Rhode Island to offer table games, thanks to voters who approved the change to stave off competition from new casinos proposed for Massachusetts. Gambling is a major part of the state budget, and to better understand how games like blackjack and roulette will affect the budget, I sat down with Paul Dion from the State Department of Revenue. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start by looking at the state of gaming with just slots at Twin River and Newport Grand. How much is that generating right now, and how much of that goes into state coffers?
So currently, just based on the video lottery terminals, which is technically what they are at Twin River and Newport Grand, we are forecasting about $525 million of what they call gross gaming revenue, which means that's the money we would have after people have been paid off with their winnings. The state receives approximately 60% of that. So we are estimating for 13, which is almost over, about $319.1 million, 83 or 4% of that from Twin River. versus Newport Grant's significantly smaller facility.
Now let's add table games at Twin River. What's the projected revenue increase?
Sure. So we're projecting for fiscal 14, and this is an official estimate, gross table game revenue. Now again, this would be after everybody's been paid off their winnings, of about $60 million. The state receives 18% of that amount. So that translates into $10.8 million of transfer that goes to the divisional lottery. Lottery then has to cover its expenses for administering the table games of about $4.3 million. So the net transfer to the state after all of that into the general fund is $6.5 million.
So $6.5 million on top of what we already receive from the video
games. Correct. In 14, we are expecting about $325.6 million from the video lottery terminals.
And what percentage of visitors to Rhode Island casinos come from out-of-state versus in-state?
So the two biggest markets, and this would be true for both facilities, are Rhode Island residents and then Massachusetts residents. They're pretty close to equal. There's a small percentage we do get from Connecticut, New Hampshire, but I would say it's about 46 or 47% Massachusetts and then 46 or 47% Rhode Island.
And now, of course, casinos are expected to start opening in Massachusetts in the coming years. And there's a line in an economic impact study done last year for the state of Rhode Island that really put things into focus. It says nobody drives past a casino to get to another casino. So what are the projected hits to gambling in Rhode Island once casinos arrive in Massachusetts?
So a lot of the projection really depends on where they put them. The Southeastern Casino is obviously of importance to us. The proposal from the Wampanoags was to put it inside of Taunton. They're running into obstacles. Now they've opened it up to some commercial partners. The last one I had heard that was the most viable of the commercial partners was a New Bedford location, which from the state's perspective might be better simply because New Bedford's farther from Twin River.
So for at least for right now, you're thinking that there won't really be too much of a threat from these casinos planned for Massachusetts?
In the forecast, and this would be a forecast that my office does, we're projecting revenue losses of approximately $100 million over about a three-year period or so. But a lot of that has to do with the timing of those licenses and when they're going to come online. Massachusetts has been a little bit slower than we initially anticipated to bring these facilities online. So the destination resort casinos, which is what they're labeling their big casinos that have to have a hotel and all that, probably aren't coming online until fiscal 17. So it's going to take them some time to get up to speed. Twin River is going to start with table games right here, you know, actually, I think Wednesday.
So, Paul Dion, you're watching both the slots-only facilities that are planned to open and the larger destination casinos. And when you talk about a destination casino, I mean, this is going to be brand new facilities with fancy hotels.
Right.
And I'm curious, how does that impact the projections for the draw? Because these are going to be state-of-the-art facilities. And how does Twin River compete with that?
I think you made a reference at the beginning that you don't drive by, you know, one gaming establishment to get to another, provided that they offer the same types of gaming opportunities. Twin River itself, by having table games, will now be able to, any of the people who are going now currently to Foxwoods or Mohegan Sun simply because they want to do table games, our ability to draw them in is going to be obviously improved. Twin River doesn't have a hotel, so it's a draw for sort of the what I would call more of a regular gaming crowd. And then obviously someone who comes to Providence for a conference who wants to do some gaming can easily get out to Twin River to do that. So that's not really a market necessarily as these destination-type resort casinos, at least not yet. Maybe that changes over time.
Now, Paul Dion from the Rhode Island Department of Revenue, we spoke with a University of Connecticut economics professor named Fred Karstensen, who's been studying the impact of gaming in that state. And here he is talking about how gambling is a single destination activity and what he sees it doing to Rhode Island's tourism industry.
Local residents had, for instance, been going down to Newport to enjoy the amenities there and the harbor and so on. Now they may go to the gaming activity, and so there'll be some diminution in the other activities even within Rhode Island as activities shift to the gaming area.
So here's someone who studies the gaming industry saying gambling takes dollars away from tourism and other entertainment activities. What impact do you expect to see from table games in Twin River to Rhode Island's other tourism destinations?
Think about Newport just for a second. They've had a VLT or high life facility for, 30, 40 years. And I don't think we've ever seen a real diminution of activities out of the central part of Newport to go to that particular facility. And that's right there. It's not even like you have to go across the state. Will it change some of the choices people make? Sure. But we think it's mostly going to be people who are now not going to choose to go to Connecticut.
Now, Paul Dionne, gaming is the third largest stream of revenue for Rhode Island, and you mentioned you're expecting the revenue to drop by roughly $100 million over a period of time as casinos come online in Massachusetts. Are there other things Rhode Island can do to try to protect this revenue stream?
The major one's been done, which is to approve the table games at Twin River to give them a competitive, at least to remain competitive. And actually, in the near term, they'll have a competitive advantage because it will be the only one with a full casino-type experience with video lottery terminals and table games. So that was probably the most important thing we could do. You know, it's inevitable that we were going to lose some money once Massachusetts went forward with the gaming scenario. So the question really before us now is, how do we minimize the losses? Twin River will have about a two-year, possibly a three-year advantage that will allow it to build itself up, compete heavily. It's done a fantastic job competing with Connecticut's two Goliaths. Their market share at Twin River has grown, and this is just on video lottery, no table games, obviously. They used to have about 16% of the Southern New England gaming market. Now they have almost 28% of the Southern New England gaming market from 2007 to 12. So given their window of advantage, we believe they'll be able to minimize the losses. But the reality is we're going to lose some business to competing casinos.
Well, Paul Dionne from the State Department of Revenue, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you.